use high-level languages to build operating system kernels? That's the question our work focuses on. High-level languages, or HLLs, have real benefits. For instance, they're easier to program in generally. They significantly simplify concurrent programs with a garbage collector, and they can prevent entire classes of kernel bugs. For instance, we inspected all the fixes for Xcode CVEs in the Linux kernel for the year of 2017. An Xcode CVE is a bug that allows an attacker to execute malicious code in the operating system kernel, and found that 40 of these CVEs were due to memory safety alone. Had the kernel been written in a high-level language, these bugs would not have been able to execute code. Sadly, this safety cost for performance, of course, in the form of bounds checks, cast checks, nil pointer checks, reflection and garbage collection all take CPU cycles at runtime. The goal of our project is to measure the HLL impact, the pros, the reduction in bugs and the simpler code, as well as the cons, the performance will pay for the safety tax, the CPU cycles and memory overhead used by the garbage collector, and the pause times caused by the garbage collector. The way we're going to do that is by building a new kernel in a high-level language and compare it with Linux. In order to isolate the HLL impact, we'll use the same applications, the same POSIX interface, and a monolithic kernel organization. Of course, you may have heard we're not the first people to build a kernel in a high-level language. There's a lot of related work, and they all explore interesting new ideas in operating system design and architecture. And there are also studies comparing the performance of high-level languages against C for user programs. But kernels are actually quite different from user programs, as we'll see later in this talk. And as a result, none of them measure the HLL impact for a monolithic POSIX kernel. The contributions of our work are Biscuit, a new 64-bit kernel in Go, which can run unmodified Linux applications with good performance, measurements of the HLL cost for Nginx, Redis, and CMailbench, a description of the qualitative ways that the HLL was helpful, and a new scheme to deal with heap exhaustion. So next I'll talk about Biscuit and why Go was a good choice for implementing Biscuit. First, because we're building an operating system, we wanted a language with a clear calling convention so that we could easily call assembly routines because we knew we would need them. Secondly, it seemed important that the language would compile to machine code with a good compiler. And Go has good language support for concurrency. It turns out it's easy to statically analyze as well. And it has a garbage collector. We wanted a garbage collector specifically to simplify programming effort. Go's garbage collector is a concurrent mark and sweep collector. It's concurrent in the sense that Biscuit's kernel threads run concurrently with the garbage collector. This is important because it limits the stop the world pauses to tens of microseconds. The design of Biscuit is traditional and familiar. User programs can be written in C or any other language for that matter. They're made up of processes, each of which has one or more threads, and they make system calls to the kernel using a POSIX API. The kernel runs in a single address space in kernel mode, on top of the Go runtime. Biscuit has 58 system calls, about 30,000 lines of Go code, and 1,500 lines of assembly, which is mostly for boot and entry or exit into and out of the kernel from system calls or interrupts. Biscuit has many important features, such as multi-core, kernel-supported user threads, a journaled file system, virtual memory for copy-on-write and lazily mapped file and anonymous pages, a TCP/IP stack, and several drivers, the most important of which, or at least the most sophisticated of which, are the HCI SATA disk driver and the Intel 10 gigabit network card driver. Overall, there were no deeply fundamental challenges to implementing Biscuit that were due only to the HLL. However, there were many implementation puzzles, like getting interrupts to work in a cooperatively scheduled environment, dealing with the fact that kernel threads are now lightweight threads, getting the runtime to run on bare metal, among other things, which we detail in the paper. The most challenging and perhaps surprising implementation puzzle was dealing with heap exhaustion. So what is heap exhaustion? In this diagram, the three colored boxes at the top are user processes. The big blue box is the kernel, and the white box is the kernel heap memory. All kernels have limited heap memory, and as these applications execute, they may create pipes, open files, and sockets until eventually, lo and behold, the kernel heap is full. This is a terrible situation because now no allocation can be satisfied, which means that basically nothing works. And this is a problem that all kernels face, not just kernels in high-level languages. This is also one important way that kernels are different from user applications. Kernels have to be very careful about how they allocate memory, or otherwise, it may be impossible to recover. So how can we get out of this terrible situation? One strawman idea is maybe we can simply block in the allocator if there's no memory. And in the meantime, we'll purge our operating system caches, or maybe kill a memory hogging process, and that will eventually free enough memory for us to return. Well, sadly, this simple approach can deadlock. So we don't want to do that. How about our next strawman idea, where we do like C kernels? We explicitly check the return value of each allocation, and if it fails, we'll simply handle it. Unfortunately, this is actually quite difficult to do, because now that every allocation can fail, we potentially have to undo a partially completed system call at every failed allocation, so it's not easy to do correctly. Furthermore, we can't do this in Go, in fact, because Go doesn't expose failed allocations. And to make it worse, it implicitly allocates in some situations. So even if we were willing to change the language and compiler, it's not clear that this approach would work well. And in fact, Linux tries both of these approaches and suffers the consequences of buggy recovery code as well as rare deadlocks. If you're interested, you should look up Linux's controversial too small to fail rule. So as a result, Biscuit does neither of these approaches, but instead reserves memory. And so in order to execute a system call in Biscuit, Biscuit first reserves the maximum amount of memory that this system call could use. And it does this at the beginning while there are no locks held. And that means that it's safe to block and wait as long as necessary for memory, while perhaps evicting caches or killing a memory hogging process. Finally, executing the system call, and once that is complete, we can release the unused portion of the reservation. This approach has several good benefits. Namely, we don't have to check the return value of each allocation, we don't have to recover from partially completed system calls, and it won't deadlock. Of course, in order to do this approach, we have to calculate how much memory each system call can use. Turns out the high-level language was very helpful in this regard, because it's easy to do a sound pointer analysis in Go. So we wrote a tool that does an escape analysis on our Biscuit kernel, and it uses Go's static analysis packages. Nevertheless, even with the tool, it's not easy to compute the bounds, and on the latest iteration, it took about 3 days of expert effort using the tool. Overall, our experience has been that building Biscuit has been quite similar to hacking on other kernels. For instance, in order to get good operating system performance, we had to implement many of the same operating system optimizations that Linux has. For instance, mapping the kernel text with large pages to avoid ITLB misses, using per CPU NIC transmit queues, an RCU-like directory cache that provides store-free lookups, concurrent file system transactions, and padding of a few key structs to remove false sharing. Each of these optimizations gave us at least 10% performance improvement on one or more of our benchmarks, and Go didn't get in the way of implementing these optimizations. In general, we found that getting good operating system performance is more about implementing the right optimization and less about what language we chose. So speaking of performance, let's move to the evaluation. Our main research question is, should we use high-level languages to build operating system kernels? And we have four evaluation questions to help with that. First, did Biscuit benefit from HLL features? Is Biscuit performance in the same league as Linux? What is the breakdown of the HLL safety tax? And what is the performance cost of Go compared to C? So for our first question, did Biscuit benefit from HLL features? In qualitative terms, my favorite features of Go are the GSeed allocation, defer, and multi-valued return, both of which are particularly helpful for error handling, closures, and maps. And individually, none of these features are very groundbreaking, but altogether, the net effect results in significantly simpler code. In more concrete terms, two benefits from the HLL are memory safety and simpler concurrency. For memory safety, we inspected the patches for all the publicly available execute code CVs in Linux and categorized them according to what their outcome would be had the kernel been written in Go. For 11 of them, we weren't sure what the outcome would be. 14 of them were logic bugs, thus they would likely have the same outcome in Go. However, 8 of them were use after free or double free bugs, which would disappear thanks to the garbage collector. And the remaining 32 were out of bounds accesses, which would result in either a runtime panic or would disappear thanks to the garbage collector. Runtime panic is obviously not ideal, but still likely better than executing malicious code. The second concrete HLL benefit is simpler concurrency. In general, programming in a garbage collected language, it's simpler for the programmer because they don't have to worry about when it's safe to free objects. But where the GC really shines is in implementing read-lock-free data structures. It's simpler with a GC because in C, it's quite hard to figure out when a reader has finished using an object and thus it's safe to free. In fact, this is the main purpose of RCU, which Linux uses extensively. However, using RCU is not simple. For instance, the programmer has to mark the beginning and end of the RCU sections with special code, and the programmer has to follow some rules in these sections, such as not sleeping, blocking, or scheduling, among other rules. In Go, it's not the programmer's responsibility to figure out when to safely free objects, because the garbage collector knows, and the garbage collector takes care of it, so there's no extra code necessary. In the rest of the talk, I'll discuss performance experiments that ran on a 4-core 2.8 gigahertz machine with 16 gigabytes of RAM and HyperThreads disabled. We have three evaluation applications: Nginx, which is a web server that does mostly network and file operations; Redis, which is a key value store and does mostly network operations; and CMailBench, which is a mail server benchmark and does mostly fork exec and file system operations. All of these applications are kernel intensive and demanding. There is no idle CPU time. They spend between 79 and 92% of their time in the kernel. They run on a memory file system in order to stress the CPU efficiency of the kernels, and they run for a minute. Biscuit is also configured with 512 megabytes total heap RAM. So for our second question, is Biscuit performance in the same league as Linux? We use Debian 9.4 with Linux kernel version 4.9.82. And we disabled many expensive features on Linux. Disabling these features speeds Linux up and makes the comparison more fair since Biscuit doesn't implement these features. This table shows the throughput of Biscuit and Linux and the ratio of Linux to Biscuit throughput. And the results are that on these benchmarks, Linux is up to 9% faster. So Biscuit is in the same league as Linux. However, from this comparison, it doesn't clearly measure the HLL costs, since this comparison may understate Linux performance, specifically because Linux is optimized for situations that may not be exercised in these benchmarks. For instance, Linux is NUMA aware and optimized for more than 4 cores. So in order to focus on the HLL costs, in the next 2 experiments, we'll measure the number of cycles that Biscuit pays for the HLL tax, and we'll compare operating system code paths that differ only by the language and have the same features. The way we'll break down the HLL tax is by counting the cycles spent on garbage collection, the cycles spent on function prologs, which are little bits of code in almost every Go function where the runtime can execute some housekeeping tasks like starting a garbage collection or preempting a Go routine, counting the cycles spent on write barriers, and the cycles spent on safety checks, such as bound checks and nil pointer checks. The results are that the prolog cycles actually take the most CPU time on our experiments, up to 6% of CPU cycles, whereas the write barrier and safety cycles take up to 1 and 3% respectively. The garbage collection cycles take only up to 3%, and the reason that the garbage collection cycles is so low on our experiments is that although these applications use up to 4 or 5 gigabytes of user memory, and rapidly allocate the kernel heap, causing many garbage collections, they don't have that much live kernel heap data. The reason they don't have much live kernel heap data is that user pages and file content pages are not stored in the kernel heap, except only the metadata objects describing these pages are, which are small. In general, the cycle spent on garbage collection will increase with the size of the live kernel heap, but so long as there's enough memory to make the total heap size 2 or 3 times the size of the live data, the GC cycles will be low. So because our Linux comparison didn't clearly measure the HLL costs, in this experiment, we'll compare 2 operating system code paths that are identical. In the paper, we have 2 code paths, the ping pong benchmark and a page fault handler, but I'll only describe the pipe ping pong benchmark here. The number of lines of code in the Go version is 1,200, and the number of lines in the C version is 1,800. There's no allocation in steady state, so there's no garbage collection. And the top 10 most expensive instructions on the CPU profile match, meaning they're the same instructions in the same order and use nearly the same CPU time. This table shows the throughput of C and Go and the C to go ratio in the last column. And the result is that C is about 15% faster. The main reason for this is that the Go compiler inserts these function prologs and safety checks, which result in about 16% more instructions per round trip. So what can we say about whether we should use a high-level language for a new kernel? Overall, the high-level language worked well for the kernel development. As for advice, if performance is paramount, you should probably use C since it can be up to 15% faster. Or if you need to minimize memory use, you should use C since a tighter memory budget results in higher garbage collector costs. However, if safety is paramount, you should use an HLL since it stops real kernel bugs. Or if performance is merely important, you might be willing to pay the 15% and the extra memory to get the benefits of the high-level language. Thank you.
Jeff Canning, Harvey Mudd College. I'm old enough to remember when C was considered a high-level language. And I will say that just the title of this paper gave me deja vu all over again, because we had this same question in the 70s. Should we write, you know, in that newfangled high-level language, or should we write assembly, which was really efficient? And the answer to that is pretty obvious, and I think the answer here is pretty obvious too, that in a lot of situations 15% is fine. But my question is, you implemented 58 system calls. Linux has about 372. You also did not implement some of the extra shiny features like large pages and so forth. How much is that going to cost? Because you're not really comparing apples to apples here.
That's right. So, I mean, I don't know how much it would cost. It could be that one of these features has some particular problem that's hard to implement in the high-level language, or that we couldn't optimize like Linux has. But for all the features we've implemented so far, we haven't found any one killer thing that breaks performance. So I think the question is really, can we implement the same optimizations? And if we can, then it's not clear that it'll have strictly lower performance.
Hi, Zhen Yu from Ant Financial. So great work. I actually worked for Google on gVisor. You can think of it as another Go kernel. We implemented 215 syscalls, but with extreme parametrization. My question is very simple. So do you use a special Go runtime?
Yes, we had to make a few modifications to our Go runtime.
Okay, how do you support like over 100 syscalls from Go runtime?
I'm sorry?
Go runtime itself requires the interval coverage has like about 100 syscalls. How do you handle that?
Well, we didn't need all 100. We only need enough to get the Go runtime to run on bare metal.
I see. So. Okay, can you also comment a little bit about the scheduling model? Say, how do you implement a scheduler?
Okay, so in Go doesn't implement any scheduling, in fact. Or, I'm sorry, Biscuit doesn't take care of scheduling. That's left up to the runtime. So the scheduling is the same as whatever Go
you use. So you just map to one Go routine for each application thread, or what's the model?
Yes, so each user thread gets a Go routine that takes care of its system calls for it.
Okay, got it. Thanks.
Marthy? Hi, Marthy, UTH Zurich. Great stuff. It's really good to see a sort of comparison. You made a statement, though, that confused me, which you said all operating system kernels face the problem of heap exhaustion. Which confused me, because kernels like SEL4 do not do heap allocation in the kernel, and they do it for safety reasons, and they don't do it in C, as it were. So, is this is this just a problem with POSIX, or is it a problem with all operating system kernels?
What I meant to say was all operating system kernels that have allocation have to have limited heap memory. So, if there's no allocation, then of course I think there's no.
Okay. That's a slightly different statement.
Sorry?
That's a slightly different statement.
That's true. Sorry.
So, I mean, I guess the question then is, you know, how much of that is specific to POSIX? You know, I mean, obviously, you know, you've done POSIX for a very good reason, but, you know, if you change POSIX, you know, how would you change POSIX to make it even better if you wrote it in Go, for example?
I mean, I... I'd have to think about it. I'm not sure. I do believe part of it is because of POSIX. POSIX seems to require creating some kind of kernel resources for some system calls. So I agree it seems part of POSIX, but I'm not sure how to get rid of that aspect of it.
Okay, thanks. Okay.
We'll take one more.
Henry Ching, Stanford University. So in your performance comparison with Linux, looks like you mostly focused on throughput. I'm curious about what the impact on latency is for those applications that you benchmarked.
Yep, that's true. So I'm sure you're worried about pause times. So we evaluate those in the paper, in fact. But as far as the latency difference on these applications, we can't really measure them. I actually tried at some point, but due to different missing optimizations in our TCP stack, it turned out that the main factor of latency had nothing to do with garbage collection, and I'm not sure why that is. I think it's just our TCP stack isn't optimized enough to measure these externally.
Thank you.